then we call it wilding. And other people also remove the re, mm-hmm. because it makes always a preference to something that has existed before, but rather to focus and point directly towards those processes, the powerful processes that they're always existent and that we can just embrace and promote.
So in this interview with Mikael Thiel, the founder of Apis Arborea, a nonprofit dedicated to wilding bees. A very novel concept, not happening in very many places around the world. We think so much about what we can get from the bees, not so much how the bees can thrive on their own. You know, most of the conversations that you hear about the collapse of the bees, it's all about how we've created this bastardized system of using bees to pollinate our giant unnatural monoculture farms. So Mikael's on the totally opposite end of that. Like, how do we put bees back into nature, or how do we put them into nature, even though they're not a native species here? So I think you'll find it very interesting and learn a lot about how the principles of wilding versus rewilding versus, you know, conventional bees and native bees. Not a super long interview, but I really got a lot of value out of it. Please let me know in the comments below if you'd like me to do a follow-up with Mikael. And without further ado, my interview about the bees in the wild.
So Apis Arborea is a non-profit organization that takes honeybees as a species outside of beekeeping and works with research, education, and restoration programming to protect the species in the wild. Because what's happening is that the annual mortality rate of honeybees, of managed honeybees in apiaries, is almost 70% in the US and Canada. And compare that with an...
Meaning that 70% die.
Yes.
Right.
Every year, 70% of all honeybees, of managed honeybees, are dead. With an increasing tendency. And compare that with honeybees living in the wild, unmanaged, honeybees that are protected from any kind of beekeeping activities, and they have an average lifespan of over 6 years. So that's why we, the Latin for honeybees is Apis mellifera. There's the melli in there, the commodity, the honey. We changed the name and call our organization Apis Arborea. We define it now through habitat, because honeybees have lived for 120 million years in cavities, in tree cavities mostly. And that's what we are doing. We are kind of reintegrating ethics and use biomimicry to protect this species from extinction.
Yeah. I'll just ask you a question, okay?
Sure.
So what are some
of
the specific programs that you guys are working on? Like, what are you doing here with Gergich? Are you guys working with them, or
we are? Yeah, we just started working with Gergich this spring, literally 2 months ago. And the overarching approach is that we learn from healthy honeybee ecosystems in the wild, identify certain kind of successful principles, and then see how can we integrate them in cultivated landscapes, for example, like Gergich.
Right.
And so we started our collaboration here with watershed assessments. So we walked around to see how does this all look like, what's happening, what's, you know, what's the tree cover, what is all in this ecosystem. And then they sourced those tree nests, that's how we call them. They're biomimicking natural honeybee nests in trees. So they sourced them from us, and they're setting them up now all over their vineyards. And the idea is here to empower watersheds. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. To empower watersheds?
So now the idea is we want to empower watersheds by not importing any species, but rather support that what's here. So the idea is we want to embrace and support unmanaged honeybees that live in this watershed and give them nesting habitat so that, and provide them with all the conditions needed for them to rebalance, to increase their health to the state where we can, where we find wild unmanaged honeybees in the wilderness.
In those, I imagine those wild honeybees, although that's not the purpose, if I understand you correctly, they'll be then providing ecosystem services to all the vineyards and the farmers in the area.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what it is.
So it's kind of like the principle of letting nature thrive on its own, and then all those ancillary benefits we receive by creating conditions where nature can thrive.
Exactly. That's exactly how it works. And you can call this also, you know, natural selection, to embrace and empower natural selection. What we are using, kind of a more contemporary.
I can't help definitely,
no, I love chickens too. It's like I adore them, really.
Let's just take a side.
I miss the chickens in my own garden. We don't have them anymore.
Enjoy the passing chickens. Picked up on my eyes, seeing the chickens. Hard to pass up a good photo shot like that.
Yes, and they're very photogenic.
Yes, they are.
But what I was trying to say is, to embrace and empower natural selection, and we are kind of adopting kind of a more contemporary notion of that, which is called wilding. Mm-hmm. And wilding describes self-willed ecological processes.
Right, like you're not trying to impose the state in which from like 1500 non-invasive, the ideal, but just actually taking what's actually going on in the ecosystem and then enhancing that, correct?
Exactly.
Cool.
And to do it in a very broad way so that, you know, natural selection is mainly a reference to genetics, right? Where wilding principles take in account a much broader field. Mm-hmm. For example, it's described as self-willed. That suggests that there is agency and sentience in landscapes.
Right.
Because landscapes are constituted by innumerable species. And in the olden days, it was all perceived and understood within the framework of mechanics. Uh-huh. But that is not true anymore. You know, even conventional science is now looking at agency of plants and preferences and feelings of.
Right.
So, to make it whole, to make this approach whole and empower, that's basically it, to empower landscapes and to embrace that innate wisdom to know what the pathways towards healings are.
Nice. Is there any sort of codified ideas around wilding these days, or is it sort of a relatively new concept that is just being invented as we speak?
That's a beautiful question. I think it depends on where you are. Mm-hmm. Europe is probably a little bit ahead of the States.
Right.
And there are a lot of, they call it rewilding programs,
That
are even sponsored and promoted on government levels, for example, in England, also in Holland and Germany.
Right.
Here, it's the terminology is not all the way known yet.
Yeah.
And we, as Apis arborea, changed the linguistics a little bit, and we call it wilding. And other people also remove the re, because it makes always a preference to something that has existed before, but rather to focus and point directly towards those processes, the powerful processes that they are always existent and that we can just embrace and promote.
Yeah. That's great. I love that. I have a bit of a challenge with the regenerative organic part, because re sort of points back to a past point as well. Yeah. And I made peace with it personally by there is some regenerative that is really necessary, that we regenerate the wild ecosystem relationships.
Yeah.
But it's kind of a misnomer because we are generating something entirely new. Mm-hmm. We can't go back to what was before. So I'm right there with you. That's what we're doing.
And it is there's a lot of things are shifting. Conservation here in the States has been and still is being governed by a dichotomy of bad or good, native versus invasive.
That's
a very strong narrative, and I think there are new voices coming and suggesting that this is too narrow of a focus, and we have to actually broaden this up. And I'm mentioning it because you mentioned this assumption of a certain kind of ecosystem status that once upon had existed and now is referenced to, when in fact it is kind of almost pointless at a time of climate emergency when burning carbon is changing the nitrate levels of all global soils.
Interesting.
Or climate-induced migration of all species.
Yeah.
So there is a motion underway that we have to, accompany.
We have to ride,
We can have to ride it.
Yeah.
And it misses the point of grabbing an artificial time capsule.
Yeah.
And,
right. Yeah. Yeah. Really good. And it makes me think about also, even if we didn't have this crisis of our total climate destabilization and radical transformation, we still couldn't go back to anything that was before, because nature is a constant evolutionary state. All we can do is try to ride it and work with it and be a beneficial force alongside of it. Yeah.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah.
Yeah, so just to sum this up, so we at Apis arborea, we consider Apis mellifera, the honeybee, as a novel wildlife of the Americas.
Oh, nice.
And that is, I would say, the core focus of what Apis arborea is doing. And from there, then we are developing innovative programs to link and to enhance beekeeping, conservation, and all kinds of things.
Nice. Well, thank you so much for explaining all that to us. And do you want to give the viewers a way to contact you?
Sure, yeah. The best way to contact us is through our website, apisarborea.org. That's APISARBOREA.org.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike.